Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
And I never would have probably tried Spam if it weren't for my dad.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Look at the meaty thighs on this Italian player.
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I was freaking brothers every way like MJ.
Zaw Dawes.
How dare you, Luis Valbuena's a national treasure.
I'm a pepper jack guy.
Well, I most definitely have a throbbing Corey Kluboner.
So you're delicious and sticky.
All right, so you know I'm obviously as a fantasy analyst, a professional fantasy analyst.
You really put the anal in analyst.
Did I? Great. Maybe that was subconscious. No, it wasn't subconscious. But anyway, listen, I'm straight. Let's get that out there. Anyway, this is a great way to start the show.
Hey, listen, we're we don't judge here on the Nasty Cast.
I'm comfortable in my masculinity. I do not mind saying something like,
"You're the manly Van Lee."
Indeed, indeed. So I have no problem making jokes about that. But that's not the whole point of the story. Point of the story is I'm a professional. So what I do is I go to FanGraphs a lot. I'm sure you do as well. I prefer it to Baseball Reference, honestly. Though there are a few things like that Baseball Reference does that FanGraphs does not. Anyway. So you can always get the little pop-up and says, do you want us to subscribe, I guess would be the word. And so I finally did. I paid my $20 because I appreciate the work they do and I wanted to do it. Here's the problem, though. I always forget my password. And then so today I had to reset the password and I realized why I forget it. They require a 15-character password with letters, numbers, lowercase, capital. Like I had to print out my password and like tape it to my wall. Like I'm not going to read the whole thing, even though I don't care if anybody logs into my account. But my password is literally lowercase g, $P, percentage, hashtag, capital W, 5. And it goes on like that for many, many characters.
The same combination to my luggage.
So like if this were my bank account, I'd get it. But this is like FanGraphs. What's someone going to do with my FanGraphs account?
Right. Yeah, that's obscenely complicated for a FanGraphs login.
Oh, well.
That's a little bit much. I do have to, it drives me freaking nuts when you have to have a capital this and then a number and 27 characters. Come on.
I have 3 passwords that I use for everything, which is not safe. Don't do that. But I literally do. It's so I type in the first one. If it doesn't work, I type in the second one. It doesn't work. Type in the third one. It doesn't work. And I go, well, I'm just locked out of this account.
Let me guess them. One, Van is all that is man.
I'm not going to say yes or no.
Vladdy is my sweet kitty.
And 3?
And 3, Mike Trout for Prez.
Okay, they're pretty good guesses, but they're wrong. But I'm actually going to say one of them to an extent.
Okay.
Just because it might bring up a good story eventually. Boat Show is a password I like to use a lot.
Oh.
See,
that's way too simple. We know that's not it because no websites allow something that simple anymore.
Yeah, there's usually more to it, but Boat Show is the core aspect of it. And real quick, I know we're just blathering, but I'll make this story quick. When I was a young lad, a 17-year-old, 18, whatever, too young to be drinking, but drinking nonetheless, we were playing the game Presidents and Vice President, and then you had the Beer Bitch. I don't remember the name of the card game. But
Presidents and
That's okay. So
that was like my favorite game in college.
Oh, I loved it. It was great. So somebody was rhyme master, which is a rule they'd made. So you'd say rhyme master and you'd have to go around the table rhyming with whatever the word was. And my friend Kendall, who was just a complete and total jerk, said inertia. And so I was next. And at this point, I'd had plenty to drink. And I sat there for a good couple of minutes and it hit me. Like my brain kicked into gear. And I said, you know what? I've got it. I'm going to show all of these people. This is it. And I looked Kendall dead in the face, and I said, Boat Show. Here's the thing. That doesn't rhyme with inertia. And they literally kicked me out of the game at that point. They said, we're just done. We're going to move on.
Welcome to the Boat Show, everybody. Episode 146. We are talking starting pitchers outside of the top 50. Today we will bring on the mighty Keith Farnsworth. You know him from such websites as Fantrax.com. Which is where Van and I also write. And you might notice the distinct lack of other people today. we do have the great Van Lee here. What's up, Van?
Hi. Good.
Hi. And there is just silence where there is normally Ron. He is out. He went to a seminar for nude squats and burpees. And so he's going to really improve his form there. And so he is unable to do the show this week. He'll be back next week. But we will have to do without him.
He did send us a picture of one of the best looking pizzas I've ever seen in my life. So not only is he burpeeing, he's also probably burping from the pizza. Do you prefer burp or belch? Just a curious question.
Oh, boy. I use them interchangeably, I guess. I don't really have a preference.
I use burp. I don't care for belch. I don't know why. It just sounds weird to me. Although it's arguably a funnier word because it has a different sound to it.
Also hate the word squelch. Like if you have soggy shoes, you squelch when you walk.
I don't hate it, but I don't use it a lot. I'm going to actually start using that. That's going in the vernacular now. I like it. Squelch.
There you go. I listen to a lot of horror podcasts, and for some reason, that's one of the terms that sort of comes up. Like if you're walking and, you know, something, if somebody's brains are on the floor or something like that, you know, whatever gory, creepy horror stuff kind of goes on. That word seems to weasel its way in more often than it should. What's your favorite horror story? Tweet us at NastyCastPod. It's a new Twitter handle, everybody. It is no longer NastyCastBGFN. It is at NastyCastPod, P-O-D. And, of course, you can find me. I am Nathan Dokken. I didn't even introduce myself. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dokken. Van is at Manly Van Lee. Ron, who is not present, you can still tweet at him at The Real Ma Day. And, of course, at Fantasy_Keith is our guest of honor today, Keith Farnsworth. And go follow him. He is a great follow. Let's see. Please leave us a rate and review on iTunes. And this is last call for the podcast league, everybody. Last call. You know, turn on the lights. If you want into the league, this is your last chance. And actually, the podcast league is already full. So basically what we're doing here is if we have enough people who show interest sort of at the last minute, we'll make a second, probably smaller podcast league. Or, you know, maybe we'll see what we can do there. But if you really, really want in, then it is not too late to do it. I guess maybe we should set a hard deadline. Maybe it should be like Sunday or something. Huh?
Let's go Sunday. That's good. And we can finalize the date and so on and so forth at that point.
Yeah, because we do need to set the draft. So also, if you want to support the show, you know, if you want to rate and review us on iTunes, even if you don't want the podcast league, that's a great way to support us. It helps us climb the iTunes charts and get more visibility. But you can also support the show by donating to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/nastypod. If you really like the podcast, you think we deserve a buck or two every month for doing it, we would sincerely appreciate it. You also get some free stuff. You get the 2018 Nasty Draft Guide and a couple of positional podcasts, perhaps. You can also find us on Fantrax Dynasty Baseball. We do another podcast. It is a Dynasty podcast, as you might have heard in your NastyCast feeds earlier on this week. We released our top 100 episode that we recorded, oh God, was it maybe a month ago, a month and a half ago, something like that?
Something like that. It was probably one of our most popular episodes of that podcast, so I went ahead and decided to put it on there, and the information, of course, is still relevant. But yeah, so we hope you enjoyed it. I do want to go ahead and give a quick shout-out to our patrons. Patrons. We're the Patreon. They're the patrons. I always mess that up. Richard Harris, Dave Anderson, Jason Osborne, Katie Hoax, and Ben Cook, and Ron Lewis. So those guys, I mean, hey, we super, super appreciate it. We're getting a couple bucks coming in. I'm thinking once we hit a decent amount first, we're going to do some giveaways, maybe get some cool stuff. So just if you like what we're doing, you appreciate our work, go ahead and go to NastyTracks or patreon.com/nastypod, and give us a donate, just because it's going to go back to you too, and it helps us out a lot. So we really appreciate it for sure.
Right, and you just slipped up there as far as giving our email, but actually that is something that we should touch on. If you want to enter into the podcast league and you don't have Twitter and you leave us a review and you can screenshot it and you can send it to us via email at nastytraxpods, TRAXpods@gmail.com, if you don't have the Twitter. So let's see, what do we got plugs before we bring on Mr. Fantasy_Keith, Van? What do you got coming out this week?
Well, in front of Fantrax. Today, I just released my article for Draft Targets, so you can check that out. A couple of guys I like based on their ADP and so on and so forth. Of course, we also do the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast, and I also do the Launch Angle podcast with Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver. That one will be either out now by the time you're listening to this are out soon. We basically just discussed a bunch of news, good stuff there. We talked about the Patreon. Other than that, I'm just working my butt off on some of these guides and stuff. I made a breakthrough, so hopefully our patrons are going to see some good rewards, and we'll go from there.
Very good. And, of course, I am balls deep into my dudes and don'ts. I got to the dudes of the outfield this past Tuesday, and then to Friday. Friday, there will be my don'ts in the outfield, and then I'll move on to starting pitching. But the entire infield is done, so you can check that out on Fantrax.com. And before we get into the show, we wanted to talk a little bit about the Battle of the Podcasts, which Fantasy Front Office is a part of. There's a whole bunch of, obviously, other podcasts that are competing for a title of sweet, sweet glory. And we haven't really brought it up too much on the show. And so this has basically been representing the NastyCast. Myself and Van and Ron, we've all been texting a lot. We've been going over who we're going to pick each round. So we want to go over our team a little bit here. That draft is just about done. I think there's just a pick or two left.
One more.
One more pick left. And so, Van, go ahead and kick us off with our – let everybody know how freaking awesome our first couple rounds were, because they just went, like, perfectly.
Oh, they were phenomenal. Our first three picks, I think our first four picks, I would say, were just amazing. We had the third pick in the draft, the 15-team draft. We kind of wavered a little bit initially, but we decided we're going to go pure upside. We're going to do it, and I've done it on a lot of my drafts since, and we went with Trey Turner at number three. I think Goldschmidt was probably the consensus number three until the Humidor stuff came out, but then when that happened, you could argue Arenado, you could argue some other guys, but we went with...
Honestly,
go ahead.
Yeah, I was sorry. I think for my number three, if it wasn't Trey Turner, it would actually be Mookie Betts. Like, I just think that his ADP of like 9 or 10 or whatever it is ludicrous. He's going to be awesome this year.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. Yeah, he's going way too low. But we took Turner in the wraparound. You know what? Plenty of picks later, we end up getting in the second Jose Ramirez, who has been your boy forever. And I'm fully aboard the train. I think the power spike last year is legit, and I think he can continue hitting for power. He steals. He hits for average. He walks. He does it all. So we really, really like him. That's good infield, Turner and Ramirez. Pick number three on the next wraparound was Cody Bellinger, who was still out there. We go with a lot of speed and not quite as much power early on. And Bellinger is 40-homer power right there. So that's pretty nice. We ended up moving him to our outfield because later on we got Justin Smoke at first base, another power guy. Though that was round number nine. Number four was a guy I really like and target in a lot of my drafts, and that's Quack Davis, Chris with a K Davis. 40 home run power is in the books. I mean, he's not going to hit higher than 247 because that's what he's done for three straight years, but he's going to hit for power. He's going to walk. He's going to get a base. He's going to drive in runs. He's going to score runs. He's going to do anything and everything above. So a really good couple of picks there right off the bat.
Yeah, so that's a great blend of power and speed. You got with Trey Turner and Jose Ramirez, and you make up with the power. With Bellinger and then Chris Davis there, I just think that really came together nicely.
Absolutely. Luis Castillo ended up going in the fifth as our ace, which I like, but I think you and Ron are a little higher on him than I am, but I'm totally fine with that. We ended up getting Arrieta, which we'll talk about later. Edwin Diaz, we've got a closer. It's a save holds league, so we've got some other stuff. And then it just goes from there. I mean, people don't really want to hear a whole lot about this, but basically we had a really good a pretty good draft, and I'm pretty happy with my team. What would you grade our draft so far?
Well, I like it a lot. So I would say overall it's probably an A-, just because you guys drafted Brad Ziegler, who's worthless in this league, when I wasn't paying attention. But no, we got a lot of my favorite guys. Justin Smoke, who's my dude at first base. Yo, Moncada's a dude for me at second base. Moving down the list, Dansby Swanson, you know, he's probably the one weak link, but he was our 24th rounder, and we can have somebody fill in for him if he doesn't, you know, if he bounces back, then great. But, you know, if not, then he was cheap enough where we can find somebody else to fill in. Michael Brantley, he was a dude for me in the outfield. Jose Martinez is a dude for me. Bradley Zimmer is a dude for me. That's all our outfield. So I love those guys. Malik Smith, a utility. Matt Chapman, I think, is going to have a really nice year. And then Jake Faria, I like him a lot, too. Sonny Gray, I think, is a nice, sort of number three, just a really solid number three guy. And a lot less exciting guys beyond that because you're getting in pretty late rounds. But
upside on the bench,
I'm a really big fan.
That's I like our bench a lot because we've got Franklin Barreto, Jake Bowers, yeah, Bowers, I think it was Bauer or Bowers, Harrison Bader, Dustin Fowler, a lot of my guys that I really like here. These are guys that in a 15-team league, and this is a deep bench. I think we have 10 spots or plus, yeah, something like that. I mean, we'll be moving these guys in and out throughout the year, so I think that's going to be one of our bigger strengths as well. It's going to be a fun fun thing, so we'll keep you apprised of our performance as we go along throughout the season.
Indeed. All right. So with that all out of the way, let's go ahead and get into the bulk of the show. On the other side of this break, we're going to bring on Keith Farnsworth. Enjoy the show, everybody.
There will be no nasty flag above my door.
All right, and joining us now on the NastyCast from GloriousFantrax.com, where you can read such superstars as myself and Van Lee, it is Keith Farnsworth. Welcome to the NastyCast.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
I am having a jolly good time drinking water. I think my beer fridge is crapping out on me.
Sadly,
it's not good. I had warm beer in there.
All I have is water in front of me, too. Usually I have like a cup of tea or something that's not water, but all I have is it. So I don't know if that's good or bad for the podcast, but I guess we'll find out.
Man, I'm halfway through a Red Bull and ready to go right now. So,
yeah. All right. I'm definitely in downer's mode at this type of night, depressants. I do have some my liquor cabinet is quite full. I could whip up a nice mix, I suppose, during a break. I might have to do that. We'll have to see. But anyway, we've got a lot of news to get to, fellas, so let's dive right into that. We actually had a whole bunch of signings this past week. It's pretty much everything that should have gone on in January, but it has finally taken place here close to the season. And we'll start off with maybe one of the least exciting ones. We've got Mike Moustakas headed back to Kansas City on a $6.5 million contract for one single year. So, Keith, being our guest of honor, we'll throw it to you first. What do you think of Mike Moustakas this year?
Well, I think I'm kind of underimpressed with the move. Third base is so stacked. Major league teams don't really buy into what Moustakas did in 2017. And I'm not really going to buy in either. I mean, set a career high in home runs. He went from hitting, you know, 22 to 23 as being a pace to, you know, setting a new high of 38 last year. So I like that he made contact more than a lot of home run hitters last year. But again, I'm just not going to buy in, I think, to invest enough for 2018.
I'm totally with you. He's very unexciting to me. 32% hard contact rate last year. That's actually below league average. And 45% fly ball rate. That helped the power. But it's hard to see a repeat of that home run mark of 38. I see big home run regression this year. And also between the fly balls and the 16% pop-up rate, I think there's some batting average regression coming too. And it is a very ugly lineup as well there in Kansas City. So I really have pretty minimal interest in Moustakas. Van, do you have perhaps any other opinion?
No, not at all. Everyone knows I don't like Mike Moustakas.
So.
What I'll say is, let's say that home run output stays the same and he hits 38 or whatever. I don't believe the 272 average was for real. So if it falls back to the 250 range because he does not walk, you've got a 250, 290 hitter with empty power. And I mean, in this day and age, look, you can get Lucas Duda, you can get Logan Morrison, guys that'll hit you for power, yep, and perform better in the other stats. So I, at the outset of the year, there were a lot of people saying the Angels should sign, and I'm an Angels fan for those who don't know, the Angels should sign Mike Moustakas, and I was disgusted at that thought. And even though the signing of Zach Cozart was probably a little more money than they should have in hindsight, just because no one got any money, I'm happy that Mike Moustakas isn't on the team. Now, that said, for $6.5 million, who cares? Take a flyer, see what he does. I mean, he's not going to hurt your team. The only downside to this with the Royals is that now they're going to be wasting plate appearances on, you know, a kid that they could see what they have. So that's the only kind of negative aspect in it for me. He's just a guy I'm going to avoid all year.
Well, to be fair, they don't have a lot of kids coming up that are any good.
Very true.
So not worried about that too much. And to your point, Van, a lot of those other corner infielders that are going cheap, like your Dudas and all that, I mean, even Chris with a C. Davis, Those guys at least walk a lot, you know, to help offset that bad batting average, and Moose does not do that. So let's move on to Jonathan Lucroy, who signed with the same contract, a one-year $6.5 million, but he is going out to Oakland to play for the A's. Keith, obviously Jonathan Lucroy did not have the season that we were expecting from him last year. Do you see a bounce back from him this year?
I actually do. I don't think the ballpark's going to help him necessarily there in Oakland, but I think that the A's made an investment into him with the intent of fixing his ground ball rate. So if you look at some of the players who had breakout seasons for the Athletics last year, a lot had to do with the organizational focus on launch angle. So I like the fact that I think he can make a little bounce back as far as his power goes and kind of buy into maybe putting a little bit more loft in his swing.
Yeah, he's definitely going to need that. You know, last year, it was so weird. Everything was just so far out of whack that it just makes me wonder if there was an injury that he just played through like all year and just didn't really report. Because otherwise, it's just weird to have, you know, the power drop off to such an extreme extent and, you know, the batting average faded away as well. So I think that if I'm in a single catcher league, I'm just, you know, if it gets late enough, then I'm willing to throw my hat in the Jonathan Lucroy ring just because there's huge, you know, there is a bounce back potential there. So he could turn you in a really nice profit if, you know, you're in the final rounds of your 12-team-ish draft and you can just basically drop him if he's this, you know, 2017 Lucroy. You don't really have a whole lot to lose. So to that extent that I'm in, however, I also love Wilson Ramos this year, and he's pretty much even cheaper in a lot of drafts, so I'm probably not actually going to end up with Lucroy.
Yeah, and you know, with Lucroy, I mean, look, he had a bad year. We all know that. But as I go back and look at the numbers, if you just look at the slash line, the only one that's really, truly abhorrent is the slugging percentage. It was down to 371. But even with a batting average drop-off, he had 265, which in this day and age isn't that bad. He walks a lot, so he had a 345 OBP, so that's okay. The home run numbers did come down. He only hit 6. But I also think the 24 he hit in 2016 was a bit of an anomaly. So if you consider him a 10 to 15 home run guy who could potentially hit 280 and who's going to walk a lot, yeah, there's definitely a bounce-back opportunity here. So I actually like him a lot this year, as opposed to last year, when a lot of people were saying you might want to rank him higher than Buster Posey, and I called them crazy. And guess who was right? This guy.
No, don't break your arm, pat yourself on the back there. But yeah, it is. It's crazy to go from a 35% hard contact rate, give or take, since 2012, and that fell all the way down to 22%. It just screams that something is amiss there to me.
And I think in looking at his Fangraphs page, you know, his ground ball rate skyrocketed last year, which is kind of what I was alluding to with the A's maybe taking a flyer and doing similar to him what they did with Yonder Alonso last year. His ground ball rate went from 37% the year before to over 50% in 2017. And a lot of his power stats, I mean, as you would know, you know, just basically went away. Because if you're driving the ball directly into the ground, he makes good contact, like you guys said, but he really needs to reverse that launch angle a little bit and put more loft in his swing if he's going to rebound this year.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to the most exciting signing of this group, and that is Jake Arrieta finally found a home. He's going to Philadelphia on a three-year $75 million contract. So what do you think about the value for Jake Arrieta this year, Keith? Up, down, or the same?
It's probably the same, and I'm not really targeting Arrieta in any leagues, mostly because there's other starters that I'm more excited about. He lost a little bit off his fastball. I think in the past 3 years, it's been kind of ticking down. I don't really know what the ballpark is going to do to him. Right there in Philadelphia, that's kind of a home run hitter's haven, so I don't know how much that'll impact Arrieta. Probably not too much, but just not somebody who I'm really targeting this year because struggled quite a bit last year. I know second half was good, but there's so many other valuable options there at starter, I think, that I won't have too many shares this year.
Yeah, well, he's somebody who we actually wound up with in the Battle of the Podcasts that we are a part of. And Van was, I might just defer to you here, Van, because I know you're definitely more excited about him than I was, at least initially. But yeah, it's over the second half, a 2.28 ERA over 67 innings. That does give us some promise.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's kind of weird with Arrieta is pitches from the third base side of the rubber and kind of comes across his body. So mechanics are extremely important to him. The velocity is down. I mean, we can all agree with that. So we're not going to see the 1.77 ERA that we saw a couple years ago. But I think he could improve on the 3.5 ERA, which is still pretty good, that he had last year. The strikeouts per nine are probably not going to reach a strikeout in an inning, but if he's just a tick below that, that's fine. And if the command stays as good as it was in the second half, then, yeah, you're going to get a much, much better pitcher. So I think there's a lot of room for upside. The cost right now is probably right about where I will take it, and I like targeting him as a number two. I wouldn't really want him as a number one on my team, but as a number two, I think you could have some pretty good upside. And I like where we got him in that league in particular. Ballpark-wise, you know, going from Wrigley to whatever it is, Citizens Bank? No, that's – yeah, is that right in Philadelphia? Whatever it's called. I think it's kind of a lateral move. So I'm not too concerned about that. We saw his ground ball percentage drop by about 10%, and I think that's mostly just a product of the, quote, you know, fly ball revolution. So I'm not quite too concerned with that. If he can figure out how to keep the sinker down a little more, limit the home runs, he'll be okay. But I do like him as an upside play this year for sure.
All right. How about Carlos Gonzalez going back to the Rockies? 1 year, $5 million deal. It kind of crowds the outfield out there in Colorado. Keith, what do you think about Carlos Gonzalez and who gets squeezed out now that he's back?
Well, I think it could be him if he has anywhere close to the first half that he had in 2017. I mean, he was absolutely awful in the first almost three quarters of the season. I did a write up on him, and I basically, at the end of the write-up, kind of declared, like, either he's broken or he's injured. And, you know, a few weeks after that, he ended up on the disabled list with either an actual injury or a you're hitting really, really bad, so we're going to put you on the DL type injury. And after that, he came back and he produced. He hit pretty well in the last 45 games of the season. But if he struggles at all, there's too many good bats in that lineup right now. David Dahl is having a good spring. You know, if they play somebody else at first base, you could see Desmond in the outfield. There's just so many other opportunities that they don't have any ties to him at this point. It's a 1 year contract. If he struggles, he's going to be, you know, platooned or sitting the bench.
Yeah, definitely is a wet blanket for those Rybal Tapia fans out there. Otherwise, yeah, I think, you know, with the crowded works there in the outfield, maybe. Ian Desmond is seeing a little bit more time at first base. Maybe Ryan McMahon takes the seat a little bit more often. But really, I'm not too interested in Carlos Gonzalez. And I didn't have a whole lot of interest in any of those guys I just mentioned anyway, to a certain extent. Ryan McMahon, I'm pretty interested in, but I haven't ended up with him in any drafts just because I was thinking that they were going to invest in one of these cheap first basemen that have been floating around all offseason, maybe bring back Mark Reynolds. I was kind of afraid of that. But so far, it seems like McMahon still got the job, tenuously at least. So, yeah, not too much interest for me with Carlos Gonzalez.
Yeah, the big thing this does is basically just kind of makes the whole playing time situation a bit wonky. So, I mean, in the outfield, well, Parra is coming back from, I think it was hammock bone surgery or something like that. So he's going to be out for a bit. But when he returns, you've got Gerardo Parra, Raimel Tapia, Ian Desmond, Charlie Blackman, of course, who's going to play every day, Carlos Gonzalez. At first
David
base,
Dahl, if he can stay on the field.
David Dahl. First base, you've got Ryan McMahon, Ian Desmond. So it's just a lot of question marks on the how it's going to shape up. And without injuries or super ineffectiveness, I don't know. I mean, you just can't predict it. So in a mixed league, when, you know, having one of these players go from 600 plate appearances to 450, that's a huge impact. So a lot of these guys I'm probably just going to avoid for that reason. I mean, if you strike gold and you get the guy who does get the 600 plate appearances, great, good for you. But it's kind of hard to do at the prices that some of them are going for right now. As for Cargo, I mean, there had to have been an injury or something. We saw a pretty big jump in his walk percentage, and that tells me that he was a little he was just afraid to swing. So I think there was something going on, and it was a pretty precipitous drop-off from the previous year.
It was.
I mean, he had 25 home runs and 630 plate appearances, 87 runs, 100 RBI, 7.3 walk percent, 298 average. Fell 30 points in the average, 11 less home runs. The runs and RBIs went down, and he still had a decent amount of plate appearances. So I don't know what to think of him. I think he's just a little older, and at this point with offense being what it is, I'll avoid him. If he falls to me or if I get traded, you know, him as a secondary piece in a trade, I may take it. But I don't know. The Rockies, I'm kind of going to avoid a lot of for the most part, aside from your main guys, Blackman, Arenado, McMahon, like you said, but it just depends on how far he falls.
Yeah, and just to kind of piggyback on what you said, Van, it had to be something because not only was he struggling to make contact and striking out a lot, when he was making contact, it was weak contact. So it wasn't anything near what we had seen in previous years. It was just so bad so quick that I'm like, there's got to be something wrong. So maybe he is a bounce back candidate. I mean, I picked him at like pick 386 in one of the leagues recently. I'm not going to touch him probably in a standard league because of the situation. But if you're in a deep league and looking for maybe, you know, a flyer, I think he's maybe worth it, especially in Coors.
Yeah, and then, you know, on the downside, of course, that is something that you're always worried about with Carlos Gonzalez is how long can he go without getting injured again? You know, he's just another year older now, so that just makes it even more likely to get nicked up, in my opinion. So speaking of muddled situations, we'll move on to the Yankees, who signed Neil Walker to a one-year, $4 million deal. So what does this do to the playing time for the middle infielder as well, the corner infielders, I guess, for that matter, over there in New York, Keith?
I think Walker probably stands to get the most playing time. I think his position is the most secure. They got Drury from the Diamondbacks, and I kind of like him to maybe bounce back and be a solid bat in that lineup, you know, far, far down the lineup. But it definitely pushes some of the younger bats, you know, back to the minors and you know, slows their progression into the major league lineup. So Miguel Andujar and Gleyber Torres isn't going to see the immediate playing time, so they won't be able to make an impact. But Neil Walker is going to get probably 400 plus at bats in that lineup. I think he's there to stay.
Yeah, I think that you end up maybe seeing Andujar on a different team, and Gleyber Torres. I mean, he looked pretty bad this spring, so he got reassigned to minor league camp now, and. I don't think we see him up for at least a month, maybe longer than that. Depends on how long it takes for him to shake off that rust. But now the Yankees don't really have any incentive to bring those guys up anytime soon with Walker and Drury. I think those guys should see pretty consistent playing time at second, third base there. They've also got Ronald Torres, you know, kicking around Tyler Wade down there. But I have minimal interest in those guys. And to be honest, I don't have a ton of interest in Walker or Drury outside of very deep leagues. So really, it's just kind of a net loss for those who are looking forward to seeing Andujar and Torres. Kind of a bummer for everybody all around.
Yeah, that's fairly accurate. I mean, Drury, Andujar, Walker, King DDD, Torres, Tyler Wade. It's just too many names for the position. And I didn't even touch on Gleyber Torres, which is what disappoints me because I was kind of hoping to see him sooner rather than later. I think you're right, though, Keith. Walker probably gets, well, of those guys, we know Didi Gregorius is going to be the starting shortstop. But I think Walker probably is the guy who benefits the most as far as playing time. And he should. I mean, he's a pretty good second baseman. And his fantasy stats really aren't that bad. Last year in 450 plate appearances, had a 12% walk rate, hit 14 homers. I mean, you could do much worse for a middle infielder late in your draft in a deeper league. And as a real-life baseball player, I think he really helps the team. It just makes that lineup better. So, I think it probably winds up with Gregorius at short, Walker at second. Drury kind of moves around. We'll see what happens at third base. Ronald Torres can hold that up, too. But it's kind of similar to the Colorado Rockies situation in that unless I know these guys are going to get a lot of plate appearances in these leagues that, you know, your more shallow leagues where you need your 600 plate appearances, that's, you know, just makes me want to avoid them to an extent.
Yeah, and that's, you know, this and kind of with the Rockies situation, too, it's something that you can sort of monitor as the season goes along and identify the playing time trends and sort of pounce as, you know, as the season rolls along. Neil Walker, two-win player over 111 games last year. So pretty impressive stuff. So our last move here in the news segment is Lance Lynn signing with the Twins, one-year, $12 million deal. Are you interested at all in Lance Lynn this year, Keith?
I'm not, and it's probably just because Lance Lynn's super boring. You know, looking for upside or something else. Lynn's just never been somebody who I've kind of attached on, and I know he's extremely consistent. He had the Tommy John a couple of years ago, and other than that, he's basically delivered, you know, the same season, you know, four or five times over. So the consistency is there, but Lynn's just not somebody who I really get excited about.
Yeah, I got to say, I agree. As a Twins fan, personally, I love the real-life signing. It adds some much-needed stability to that rotation. But as far as fantasy goes, I have pretty minimal investment. I don't see a whole lot of upside with him. Maybe he gets a little bit stronger another year removed from that Tommy John surgery. Maybe the strikeouts tick up a little bit and he's, you know, 7.5, 8 Ks per 9. I don't expect a K per inning by any means. And his peripherals were actually pretty startling last year, 482 FIP, 475 yep. XFIP. So that really, I think you're going to see some pretty extreme regression from that 343 ERA. I wouldn't be surprised to see that go north a full run per inning. So fantasy wise, I'm really not too interested in Lynn.
Yeah, and I'm glad you touched on the FIP and XFIP. He's always been a guy, for the most part, who has outperformed those peripherals. But is this going to be a Jeremy Hellickson situation where when it catches up to him, it really catches up to him? I don't think so. I think he's got a good enough stuff that he could be pretty solid. It shocked me. I live in Missouri, so I've seen a lot of Cardinals games too, and I've always had him in the back of my head as a pretty good starter, but it shocked me to see how much he actually walks batters. Last year, 3.77 walk per nine. The last healthy year he had in 2015, he had a 3.49, 3.18 before that. So he just walks more batters than I remember, and you just simply can't succeed doing that in this day and age, particularly with more home runs. You walk a guy, you give up a home run, boom, 2 runs on the board. I do like it, like you said, Nate, as a real-life signing because he's great for the Twins. He'll fill in some innings, and he gives them a chance to win. But, yeah, as a fantasy guy, I'll probably pretty much avoid him, though I do think he could be a 200-inning pitcher. And if you're at the tail end of your draft and you've got some big injury risks, you know, why not take him and just make sure you at least get some statistics on the board?
Yeah, I think you saw the best case scenario out of Lynn last year, just based on the way he pitched. I think that was the best possible scenario. I think there's definitely some regression kind of creeping up. His strikeout to walk rate was the worst of his career. You mentioned kind of the walks and kind of putting yourself in a position to give up the home runs. Home runs are up like crazy the last 2 years. So if you're giving up, 1.5 home runs per 9 innings and walking that many batters, the chances of you getting a 3-5 ERA is pretty unlikely.
Yeah, and the Twins defensively, like their outfield defense is great. You know, you've got Byron Buxton out there, going to win a Gold Glove for the next 10 years. And then Max Kepler in right field is very, very good defensively. And then there's Eddie Rosario, who needs to cover all of about 3 feet. But whereas I like that for Odorizzi, who's an extreme fly ball pitcher, Lance Lynn is a little bit more of a ground ball tilt and having a little bit more mediocre defenders in the infield, particularly big old tank, Miguel Sano, supposedly over at third base. We'll see if he actually plays there to open the season.
Generous carriage. Come on. Be polite.
Yeah, he's tank-like. But yeah, so that gives me a little bit less optimism on Lance Lynn defensively. So that's it for the news, as if that wasn't enough. We're going to move into the bulk of the show now, and that is featuring starting pitchers outside of the top 50. We did the top 50 starters 2 weeks ago before the mock draft, and so we're going to focus on some deeper league guys this week. And of course, we start off with ADP Wars.
War has changed. It's no longer about nations, ideologies, or ethnicity.
Instead, it's more about laser show out in Baxton, Pedroia.
I wrote down Mazzara here, and I disagree with myself.
I'm gonna give a slight edge to Eric Hosmer.
Well, you can't make us sound any dumber than we already do. And how that works is we got two guys. This is just strictly based on Fantrax.com ADP. We're going to take two pitchers who are right next to each other and basically decide who we're going to draft if given the choice. So, Keith, we'll start with you. We're going to go with Kevin Gausman with an ADP of 195 versus Aaron Sanchez, who is one pick behind him at 196. So which way are you going, Kevin Gausman or Aaron Sanchez?
I'm going to have to go with Aaron Sanchez on this one. I've never really been a Gausman guy. I like what Sanchez did in 2016, obviously. 30 starts, a flat 3 ERA, finished 7th in the Cy Young in 2016. He was a top fantasy asset as far as starting pitcher goes. And on Gausman's side, I know the second half is incredible. He pitched way better in the second half, but the whole tape of what Gausman has done, not only in 2017, but also in years past, is just pretty muddy. It's not something that I really want to invest in. So this one's Aaron Sanchez for me, and it's probably not very close.
Okay, well, we got some disagreement right off the bat here because I'm going to go Kevin Gausman in this one. Always makes for better radio. I mean, I've been a Gausman guy for a long, long time. And Keith, God, are you lucky that you haven't been sucked in, because it's been a miserable, horrible ride every year being a Gausman fan. But, you know, you mentioned the second half ERA. Well, the second half splits, I guess. The second half ERA was 3.41 after a first half ERA of 5.85. So he was a lot better down the stretch. He brought back the splitter. Used it 14% of the time over the first few months. I don't know why you would scrap that. It's your best pitch. So he got back to pitching, to throwing that a little bit more. And surprise, surprise, he got better. Although even over the second half, he still gave up 1.51 homers per nine. There are positive signs to take away from the second half of last season. You know, but that always seems to be the case, you know, year in, year out. And then by mid-May the next year, we're all scratching our heads. But I'm still going to go with him over Sanchez. I want to see a full healthy season from him before I can invest a pick in him. Those blister issues really didn't go away. And if it's something with these new balls, which, you know, they aren't new balls if you ask Manfred, but I'm not sure if those blister issues go away if he can't get used to this new ball. So, and honestly, even in 2016, his peripherals had him as like a mid threes ERA guy and like a league average strikeout. So I'm not even convinced that like the upside is worth the downside of, you know, basically having a terrifying floor there. So for me, I'm going to go back on the horrifying Gausman trade. But you know, honestly, I'm probably not drafting either one of these guys.
See, this one was really tough for me because I actually I do like both of these pitchers. I really like Sanchez, actually, and the reports coming out of the spring have been pretty good. When they called him up initially, they were going to do reliever stuff with him, so he really didn't work on his changeup very much. There are a lot of reports that that's what he's working on this spring, and so the results have been a bit mixed, but who cares about spring stats, but I won't get into that. But if he gets that changeup working, I think the strikeouts can really bump up. Initially, as I just read Gausman versus Sanchez, I thought, you know, I'm probably going to go Gausman just because his strikeouts are better. They really aren't. I mean, they're a little better, but he's not a greater than a strikeout per inning guy. I think ultimately I'm going to go with Sanchez here. And the reason being is, for me, we saw Gausman pitch and pitch horribly. We haven't seen Sanchez pitch and pitch horribly. We've seen him pitch well when he pitches. So I think I'll take the risk on him. I think you're a little bit right, Nate. The ADPs are probably a little too high. If we're talking 30, 40 picks later for both of these guys, I could see myself ending up with them on a lot of my teams. But as it is right here, I think there are just some better options. But if you gun to my head, pick one of these guys, I'm actually going to go with Aaron Sanchez.
Yeah, a little bit too much risk with both of these profiles for me at their ADP. Our second matchup, we'll move on to Tanner Roark with an ADP of 244 versus Sean Manaea at 245. So, Keith, we shall give you the honors here again. Tanner Roark or Sean Manaea?
Well, I've owned Manaea in a couple dynasty leagues for several years, and it's been, you know, pretty frustrating. Maybe not Kevin Gausman frustrating, but it's been pretty bad. I'm going to go with Tanner Roark as a bounce-back candidate, another strong contender in 2016 coming off a bad season last year. In the second half, he improved his strikeout to walk percentage by almost 7%. So he was among the league leaders in that in the second half. And maybe he figured something out as far as pitch mix wise. I know he's talked about maybe not having his best stuff last year, and maybe that's an excuse. Maybe that's an actual thing. But at the price, I think that's actually not a terrible buy for Roark at 244.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on this one, although it still drives me nuts that his name is Roark and not just Roark. Roark is so much cooler. But I'm trying to get over that. It's only been a couple of years. But this is like late enough in drafts where I typically go upside, which is probably Manaea. But the health issues that we've seen from Manaea ding him enough for me to go Roark here. And Roark overperformed in 2016 and then regressed really hard the other way in 2017. Because if you look at 2016, his ERA is 2.83. Then at 17, it ballooned up to 4.67. But his FIP both years, his FIP in 16 was 3.79. And then in 2017, it was 4.13. So where you're looking at is probably a true talent ERA right around that 4 mark, which these days really isn't that bad. And he's great at inducing soft contact. Even last year, he only allowed 27.8% hard contact. Also went to his off-speed stuff a little bit more, and that generated more whiffs. He had a career-high swinging strike rate, 10.1%. So I think you can also rely on like 180 or more innings from him with a solid ERA, you know, K's around 8 per 9. Whereas with Manaea, you're probably going to be lucky to get 160 innings out of him. And also, it might also surprise you that Manaea has never posted a K per nine above eight, because I always considered him, maybe it doesn't surprise anybody else, but like coming up through the minors, like, oh my God, that slider, I was just drooling and I thought he was going to strike out everybody. Hasn't even approached a strikeout per inning as a major leaguer.
Yikes.
Crazy. Yeah, and this is going to be a sweep. I'm going to go with Roark. Both guys had down years last year, and neither one strikes out that many batters, like you just said. I'm going to go with Tanner simply because in the past 2 years, he's thrown almost 400 innings, whereas Manaea in the last 2 years has thrown 300 innings. So, I mean, just that alone makes it more worthwhile to take Roark for the innings. But that also being said, I mean, Roark in 2016 had a 2.83 ERA. So, I mean, the chance, even though the other extra metrics say that that wasn't accurate, the chance that that could happen is still more plausible than it would be for Manaea, a guy who I've never really had all that much interest in anyway. So definitely a clean sweep here for me. Also, you know, real quick, there's a Pokemon, and its name is something Roark or something like that, and you saying that made me think of it. And so listeners out there, because there are a lot of fans of baseball and Pokemon, I'm sure, why don't you go ahead and tweet me, at Manly Vanley, what is the name of that Pokemon? I can picture it. It's dark and it's mean, but that's all I know.
Man, dust all those Pogs off of your keyboard so you can actually type.
Oh, we're not talking Pogs, are we?
I have to tell a Pog story. All right.
Oh great.
No, what have I done? This is actually really good. Okay. So when I was a kid, I had my Pogs. They were popular. Look, I'm 32. Pogs were popular when I was in school. So anyway, I had a bunch, and you know, they had little names on them or creatures and all kinds of crap. But I had one, and it was this little monster, had like three eyes, and it was just kind of goofy or whatever and cute, except they were from England. And its name was Wanker. And as a kid, I'm like, yeah, look at my Wanker. It's so cool. Several years later, I go back and look and go, oh, my God, that thing was called Wanker? How did they get away with that? So anyway, I had a Pog called a Wanker.
Nice job. So
that explains why you had so many, like, 65-year-old men hovering around you inexplicably.
That and Mary Nguyen stole my Pogs out of my backpack in fifth grade, and it made me so mad. I had anger issues when I was a kid, too, so I threw a fit. We had our backpacks all along the wall. We had to hang them up, and we had another dividing wall, and I know she stole my Pogs. I know she did it, and to this day, as you can see, I'm clearly still very angry about it.
As you should be.
Keith, you really opened just a whole Pandora's box here when you mentioned Pogs.
I know. You and I are the same age, so I definitely have a lot of Pogs stories, but I'm probably going to spare the listeners tonight. Maybe a different show. We'll come together and just talk Pogs.
The Pogcast.
Well, you know what we have to do now? We have to start a sister podcast, the Pogcast.
I'm game. I will do it. Talk about wankers all day.
Speaking of wankers, Tyler Glasnow is coming up next on our list. His ADP is 341. He is going to be duking it out against Tyler Molly in this matchup, whose ADP is also 341. So, Keith, we'll start with you. Tyler Glasnow or Tyler Molly?
I'm going to go Glasnow, and I know he's had control issues. That's probably underselling it by, you know, a mile. But yeah. I like the velocity and what he's done this spring. And I know he hasn't pitched necessarily well this spring, but he's striking out like 16 batters per nine. His velocity was already upticking last year, and spring reports are very favorable as far as his velocity right now. So kind of like you were saying, Nathan, I want to go upside definitely at pick 341. This is kind of a lottery ticket for me. If he fails in his first five starts, I'm probably dropping him and picking somebody else up. But I think he has pretty elite level upside, so I like taking the flyer there on Glasnow.
He does have elite level upside. I totally agree. I'm just not convinced that he's a starter. Every time he's with the Pirates, he just invariably gets shelled. And so if you want all the upside, it's easily Glasnow. But I think you can get a lot of stable innings from Molly and not have to worry about him just obliterating your ratios like Glasnow might do. And Molly last year, he had 11 walks in 20 innings with the Reds. But that is way off of what he did throughout the minors. So I'm expecting a walk rate well lower than that, probably under 3 per 9. He's also very good at limiting home runs as well, and that's going to be a key to his success at Great American Ballpark, which is obviously a very homer-friendly place to reside. So I think he could maintain an ERA probably around 4 with league average strikeout rate and a pretty decent whip. So I think at that ADP, that's actually a bit of a bargain. And just as a sort of a, asterisk or whatever for all of these, especially this past matchup and this one and this next matchup coming up. If you're in points leagues, I will always lean for the guy who's going to give you just a ton of innings because that gets you so many points right there. So like if I'm in a points league, I'm going Molly a lot more easily because I'm just pretty convinced that you're going to get a pretty solid season out of him and get a lot more innings. And the same was with Tanner Roark in our previous matchup.
You know, these are the two least intimidating first names going off against each other on this list. Like, Tyler to me is just like, if someone said, man, Tyler's really mad at you, he's going to come get you, I would not be intimidated in the slightest, which is sad for these
When guys. I hear the name Tyler, I think of Tyler Durden from Fight Club, and I'm immediately intimidated.
That dude mess you up.
That's a good one. I consider that the exception to the rule. However, these two Tylers are not intimidating, but I guess they could be eventually. I'm going to go Glasnow. I'm going to agree with Keith. It's upside for me. We're at pick 350 in the league. If Molly could strike batters out, I would like him a lot, but it's just I don't think he really will, and he's just not that exciting to me. But if Glasnow hits any little bit of his potential, even if he throws 120 innings, but it's at 80% of what people think he could do, you're going to get really, really good statistics. And I've ended up taking him in quite a few leagues this year, but it's a bench guy. I mean, at this point in the draft, for the most part, he's either going to be at the very end of your staff or on your bench, and you're going to determine what to do from there. I wouldn't be afraid to drop him. I think you even mentioned that, Keith. If something comes up, just move on. But yeah, I'm definitely going to go with Tyler Glasnow on this one. Molly just doesn't do it for me.
I'd be afraid to start Glasnow. I've ridden that trade a couple times. Like, if I did draft him, I would probably start him off on my bench just to see what he's doing, make sure that he's, like, at least not, god awful. Of course, then you throw him in there, he'll go an inning and a third and give up seven runs.
That's definitely what I would do. I would draft him and sit back and wait and just see what he does over the first few starts. And if he's, lights out, maybe you'd look to trade him at that point to somebody who actually believes he's, sustainable at that level. But it's going to be a roller coaster ride with Glasnow, whether he succeeds or not. But I'm not going to be tied down to him. If he starts to suck the first five or, eight starts, I'm dumping him and moving on.
Yeah, and there's very few guys who can really succeed year in and year out with basically two pitches. And he still has yet to really come up with that changeup that is a solid enough third offering to turn over a lineup three times. And so that gives me additional pause.
The way it's been lately, instead of Glas now, it's more like Glas later. Am I right?
Oh, I'm going to slip you a Molly and go steal all your pogs.
Damn it. That would be the worst.
One upped.
He doesn't have any more. They're already gone.
That's true. They're already stolen.
Mary Wynn stole them. Yeah.
Mary. All right, last matchup here is going to be Kyle Gibson. We're really down in the dregs now. Pick 430 overall. Kyle Gibson versus Brandon McCarthy, who's going off the boards at 433. So, Keith, who you got here, Kyle Gibson or Brandon McCarthy?
Can I pass? Because, I think I just ranked my top 80 starters, and these guys aren't really anywhere close. So if I consider taking one of these guys in my drafts, I'm either playing in a super deep league and asking for it, or I'm doing something wrong because Kyle Gibson scares the heck out of me, and Brandon McCarthy hasn't pitched more than 12 innings, I think, his entire life. So I'm not really interested in either one of these guys. If I had to pick, I guess it would be Gibson, but that's just kind of throwing a lottery ticket out there.
Yeah, I actually picked up Brandon McCarthy in our 15-team Dynasty Baseball League just because, he was out there and I had an empty pitching spot. So I think that he can, when he pitches, I expect him to be decent, but it's like you said, he's probably, he'll make three starts and then he'll go on the DL for a month. And so that's pretty much what you can expect from him. So I would actually lean slightly Gibson as well. The second half actually was good for Gibson. And if you look at his K-minus walk percentage from the first half to the second half, first half was 3.5%, just god-awful, what you would expect from Kyle Gibson. But over the second half, it was 15.1%. And he also dropped his hard contact from a very Kyle Gibson-esque 38.6% down to 32.1% in the second half, and that led to a 3.63 xFIP. And he started throwing some more sliders and some more four-seams, and he cut back on the sinkers a little bit. So there is a little bit of a tangible change there. And I am still very skeptical, I will say that. But down here, it's kind of like you just throw up your hands. What the hell? If you need a pitcher, then you know. I guess it's going to be Kyle Gibson in this matchup.
I'm going to go with Brandon McCarthy. Actually, literally what I wrote on my sheet here is just "ew," and then I stopped.
I wrote "pass." Pass is all I wrote on my sheet. So yeah, we're on the same
page here. Definitely, yeah. Now, what I'll say about Gibson is, if you're going to strike out six batters an inning, that's not great as long as you can still pitch well. However, if you're only going to strike out six batters an inning, how are you walking 3.5 batters per inning? Is your control that bad and your stuff's that bad? And that's a big reason right there why I don't want anything to do with Gibson. Yeah, we know he's probably going to get more innings, but there's also the upside play of Brandon McCarthy, whereas, sure, he's only going to strike out six batters an inning, but he generally only walks, you know, 2.5 per nine. So I'll stick with him. I think just the upside's a little bit higher with McCarthy, but you're right. This is an ew/pass situation all the way.
And just to kind of piggyback on what Nathan said a few minutes ago, talking about Kyle Gibson and the improvements in the second half, his strikeout minus walk percentage increased by 12% in the second half, which was the second highest of any starting pitcher. The only one that was higher than him was Justin Verlander. So he did have noticeable improvements in the second half.
There you go. So there is that. All right, we're going to take a quick break here and come back with some targets and avoids.
It's raining. Nasty.
Hallelujah, it's raining.
Nasty. Nasty.
Hallelujah, it's raining.
Nasty.
Hey everybody, it's me, Joe Pizzapia. Baseball is back, and so is the Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018 edition. This year, I've got Paul Spohr doing the starting pitching chapter. I've got Jake Seeley doing outfield profiles. I've got Sammy Reed doing DFS. We got championships waiting for you. Go get it right now, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018, available on Amazon in paperback and for Kindle and on iTunes, because once you go Black Book, well, you know the rest.
All right, welcome back on the Nasty Cast, and it is time to look into some bargains. We're going to dive into the bargain bin here. Pitchers outside of the top 50, according to Fantrax.com, average draft position. This is where you make your big profits every year, folks. It's in these waning rounds where you can really hit some gold. And so, Keith, who are you looking at outside of the top 50 to turn you a tidy profit at starting pitcher this year?
So one of my biggest targets is Charlie Morton. Charlie Morton is a completely different pitcher than what he was in his previous, you know, 6 or 8 seasons. So before last year, his career ERA was like 4.54, 4.something, and his WHIP was almost 1.5. But in the last 164 innings, he's been completely different. 3.68 ERA, 1.20 WHIP. We saw what he did at the end of the World Series there last year, almost closed it down completely by himself. He's talked about feeling different. He's added velocity to his fastball and to his repertoire. So Charlie Morton, at the pick that he's going right now, is one of my biggest targets, I think, for this fantasy season.
Yes, I see. I have that ADP up. Let's see where he is.
I'm trying to do the same thing.
176 overall.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yep. That is
and just to give you an idea, I have him ranked pretty high, so I'm probably going to be the high man on him. I have him ranked as my 28th starting pitcher, ahead of guys like Alex Wood, Garrett Cole, Kyle Hendricks, Lance McCullers, guys like that. So I'm not afraid to be bullish on Charlie Morton this year.
Over Lance McCullers.
Oh, boy, here we go.
And I like Lance McCullers. I really do. He's another one of my targets, but... Yeah, I can't have enough Charlie Morton shares this year.
You guys know the Super Mario thing with the Koopa kids, where there's, you know, 8 of them. It was a Super Mario World for the Super Nintendo where they were introduced. Well, anyway, one of their names is Morton Koopa Jr., so I always call Charlie Morton Charlie Morton Koopa Jr.
Oh.
Aw.
The Koopa Troopa. All right, I got 3 guys that are going outside the top 50. I'm going to throw at you here. One is going to be Blake Snell. Balake, starting pitcher number 58. His overall ADP is 207. Over the second half of the 2017 season, 3.49 ERA, and the walk rate was much improved. It was down to 2.91 walks per nine. after a 5.88 walks per nine in the first half. So you might say he improved a little bit. So I'm looking forward to him carrying that over to the 2018 season. Jordan Montgomery is the second one. He is the 65th starting pitcher off the board, 228 overall. Four really solid pitches, fastball, slider, curveball, change, 12.2% whiff rate last year. That suggests he could approach a K per nine this year, and he'll get you lots of wins pitching for a Yankees team that is just too damn good. And then Patrick Corbin is going to be my third guy. I wrote him up in my course correction series very, very early in this offseason. He is the 67th starting pitcher off the board, so he's risen a little bit since I wrote about him, or maybe a lot of bit. I guess I can't remember his overall ADP because it is now 233. And over the second half of last season, Corbin registered a 3.26 ERA, and that was pretty much coincided with when he started throwing the bejesus out of his slider. So that worked out pretty well. And so I'm wondering if he can't turn into a little bit of a Chris Archer light this year if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, and I decided not to put Patrick Corbin on my list for the sole reason I knew he was going to be on your list.
Okay.
So I instead went the other way with Taijuan Walker. He's at pick 55, so I mean, he's just right out of there. So it's not a huge bargain, but I do like him a lot. I think he makes the jump to 180-plus innings this year. And last year, he had a 3.5 ERA. I think that's repeatable. And I could honestly see it getting better. I'd like to see some more Ks. And if he drops the walks down a little bit, he could take a really big step forward. But I think with the humidor being in place, his numbers are at the very least repeatable. And I think that's valuable enough at that position. And then I'm going fairly deep here. CC Sabathia, I think, is just he is what he is now. I mean, he's not going to be the CC Sabathia of yore, but he's a solid pitcher who's not going to kill your ratios, and he's on a really, really good team. So he's probably going to get those wins if you're in a wins league, though, of course, don't chase wins. I mean, we all know that. Great guy for maybe a spot start off your bench or just to accrue some innings. Jared Eichhoff at pick 96. He dealt with some injuries last year, and I think he really does bounce back to maybe those 2016 levels. And if that happens, he's an 8K per nine, 2 walks per nine guy with an ERA around 3.5. And then lastly, I can't quit him. It's Daniel Norris, pick number 134. I actually wrote down, can't quit the man in the van because everyone loves his van. He has so much potential, but just kind of sucks. I think there's probably a little more bullpen involved with him at this point, but this is the make or break year for me. I read somewhere, and I don't recall, so I'm sorry I can't credit whomever wrote it, but something along the lines of if he decides to go with more of a Zach Greinke approach and rely less on his fastball, he could really turn a corner and be really good. So if he gets up to 150 innings this year, does that, maybe he'll have that K per inning and be some pretty valuable stuff there out of the Detroit rotation. Because I do think he gets that fifth starter's job because they have no reason not to give it to him.
Oh, man, but you're underestimating Ron Gardenhire's love for Francisco Liriano.
That's
true.
Oh,
my gosh.
That's true, yeah.
That's going to be, honestly, a pretty big obstacle, I think. And Norris still has an option remaining, so we'll see if he starts the season in AAA. I wouldn't honestly be very surprised, but I've been a long-term Daniel Norris fan myself, so I'm with you. But I did, the only Dynasty League that I had Daniel Norris in, I traded him for Jose Martinez.
Ooh, your boy.
Yep, Target Supreme. So let's see, we're going to move on to the avoids, which I much more appropriately named starting pitchers outside the top 50 that you are not buying, even though they're cheap. It's a good title, I think. So avoids, Keith. Who are you not touching?
The first one, ADP-wise, is Brent Honeywell. I don't know if that counts or not. But I'm probably not drafting Brent Honeywell right now. The other two for me are Julio Teheran and Irving Santana. Teheran, I can't figure him out. He's not striking out enough batters. That ballpark's probably not going to be favorable for him. At least it wasn't last year. And Irving Santana, that 4.46 FIP in 2016 has got regression written all over it. Those are two guys, I guess three guys, if you count Honeywell, that I probably won't have any shares of.
But what are your thoughts on Jose De Leon this year?
No.
Spending a lot of time on the couch. So my guys I'm avoiding, I also don't like Teheran, so he would be on my list. I actually put Aaron Sanchez on my avoid list. I just can't get interested in him as a 53rd starting pitcher. Lance Lynn, we already talked about him. He's on my list as well. And so my third guy is going to be Alex Reyes. the 70th starting pitcher overall. Obviously, he's very, very cheap, and I do expect a ton of strikeouts and good ratios and everything, but I just think it's going to be largely out of the bullpen, and I would, you know, rather just invest in a starting pitcher who's going to start. Who knows if, you know, when or if, I guess I should say, the Cardinals will actually move him to the rotation. And they've said that they are going to do that because they are afraid of putting him in the closer role. And that might, you know, make it hard for them to put him back into the rotation, just because I could almost guarantee, you know, that he'll be lights out as a closer. But I'm just not into Alex Reyes this year as a starter.
I had Reyes on my list, too. And basically, I just said for this year, because after Tommy John surgery, often the hardest thing to get back is your command. And guess what? Reyes struggled with command even before the injury. So I think you said, you know, he probably have good ratios. I don't know if he really even does, because if he's going to walk a ton, then that's going to hurt his overall numbers as well. And I'm very afraid for that command. However, for his career, obviously, I think he's going to be a nice bet. So he's definitely an avoid. Sean Newcomb at 84, similar deal with command. You cannot walk five batters an inning and succeed ever. And I remember early on in the offseason, somebody asked me, what do you think of Sean Newcomb? And I still had the Angels prospect of him in my mind. And I went and looked at his numbers, and I thought, oh, my gosh, at five per walks per nine, that's insane. If he were a four walks per nine guy, I could say, yeah, maybe there's potential. But five, I'm pretty much out on him. I think he ends up in the bullpen, if anything. Carlos Rodon at pick number 92. Major shoulder injury means I'm not going to touch him for his career until I see a season where he has 150 innings and good ratios. So until that happens, I'm going to avoid him. And then I also put Kyle Gibson down at pick 129 just because I think he's gross.
Well, pretty easy to avoid him down there, so you won't have to feel gross.
Yeah, and again, this is Keith tried to steal my jokes because I was going to say something about Brent Honeywell and Jose De Leon again, but I'll give him that one. It's not as bad as the PCP is stealing my Tide Pod joke, though.
Yeah. You were furious about that one.
Livid. I was pounding the table and everything.
Literally. Ran around a little bit. You were throwing pogs against the wall. It was just
getting crazy.
Yeah. So that's going to do it. Keith, thanks so much for joining us. Before we get out of here, be sure to tell everybody where they can find you on social media and plug in anything you got coming out in the coming days and weeks.
All right. So I just put out kind of draft targets. That was one of my favorite pieces to write this year, kind of highlighting some of the guys that that I really want a lot of shares of. But definitely, if you can, give me a follow at @fantasy_Keith. I try to be as active as I can on Twitter and answer any kind of questions that have coming up as far as draft season.
Awesome stuff, man. And so that's going to wrap us up. Next week, we'll be talking closers. We've never actually done, I don't think, a full honest-to-God episode on closers in the history of the Nasty Class. But next week, we're going to bring on Greg Jewett, and he is going to talk us through it. We're going to get through all of the closers and all the handcuffs that you can possibly imagine. So until then, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.